This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem.
A good afternoon to everyone listening here in sunny Southern California. I am Alan Gervie, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I couldn't manage your life if I didn't have someone managing my life. My life today is being managed by none other than Kerry Kasem. Hey, Kerry.
Hi. I really thought you were going to say someone else. Like
your
mom.
I would never say
your wife.
That. Never.
No?
For this hour, you manage my life. And I want to tell you something, Kerry. I was so thrilled about the vote yesterday. All our listeners voted to see whether you would remain with me or I would be leaving, and you won. We are remaining together. Thank goodness, because if we didn't, how would I ever manage by myself?
How would
I ever chart a course in life in the future? How would I take responsibility for my actions if I didn't have you, if I didn't have this support system? Is it possible that a country can take responsibility for the actions and chart their own course?
I don't know, Alan. I think you do just fine. I'm glad I'm here, though. I'm glad I'm still here. Thank you, everyone who voted.
You know, I got to tell you, we hear a little chuckling, and I am so excited today because when we talk about taking responsibility for our actions, for being who you are, being true to yourself, working hard, making it in this world without excuses, who do we think of?
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil's a fake. I'm telling you, I know, I'm not going to mention who it is, but I know someone and I don't want to get into it. So if you think you're going to listen to Dr. Phil, you listen to the sage, the South Central. Today we have on the show, Kerry, none other than Larry Elder. And for those people who don't know Larry, because I know there's a lot of people listening on KBC.com around the world, and they may not have come to the station that Larry Elder is on, or they may not have seen him on TV. Larry Elder is a graduate of my alma mater, Brown University. What do you think of that?
Oh, you know, before he starts talking, because I'm just going to give him the floor, I'm probably just going to sit back and listen to you. I have to say I've been listening to you since I was basically, I don't want to say old enough to know talk radio, but as I got older, I'm like, talk radio is great. I stopped listening to music, and I just listened to talk. There was a time about 20 years ago, my friend's listening now, Ashley, when I was listening to you on the radio, and we had this thing we'd always call in. Mm-hmm. I'd called into you a long time ago, but she was calling in. I'm on hold to talk to you, and I'm listening to my friend talk to you, and we were always calling into your show. You are exactly 20 years difference with my dad. You both have the same birthday, April 27th, mm-hmm. And you have helped shape my views and my political views. My dad being a tree-hugging liberal, my mom a Republican fundraiser, so I was kind of right down the middle. I started listening to you, and really moved to the right a lot more. And the way you present things, the way you explain things are just so...
All right, Kerry. No. You can tell him after the show.
I have to say this, man.
After the show. He is our guest.
And you make such sense. I love you, Larry.
Okay, go kiss him.
Thank you so much.
Hug him.
I'm going to give him a kiss after this.
And if I had a set of pipes like your dad, I could make a living in this business.
You do have pipes.
What a voice.
Living in this business. So, you know, you went to law school. Of course, you were a lawyer. You went to Michigan Law School.
Right.
Was a lawyer. You had your own.
Still am. Haven't been disbarred.
Right. Had your own recruiting firm way back in Cleveland.
Right.
Your award-winning syndicated talk show host. You have a star, just like Kerry's dad, on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You are TV host of Moral Court. And again, this is a legal show. Moral Court has morals and law. They intermesh, believe it or not. And I know you believe that. You have been featured on 60 Minutes 2020, often heard around the world on television commentating and talking about the issues of the day. With all that behind you, Larry, tell us, what are you most proud of?
Wow. I think I'm most proud of turning out to be a son that my mom and my dad felt that they had raised properly. My dad always told me, my dad had a very difficult life. We'll be talking about that later on, I guess. And my dad always told me hard work wins. You get out of life what you put into it. You can't control the outcome, but you're 100% in control of the effort. Before you whine, go to the nearest mirror, look into the mirror, ask yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome? And no matter how hard you work, how good you are, how many good decisions you make, bad things are going to happen. And when those bad things happen, how you address those bad things will tell your mother and me whether or not we raised a man. I think my mother and father believe that they raised a man.
Absolutely.
So now, that's what I'm most proud of.
And I retweeted that, I have to say.
He put
that up about his dad. He made a whole little cartoon thing, and I retweeted it.
So
he said it all the time.
Yes.
It was a mantra. And sometimes I would say, Dad, please, not too much pressure.
So the book is called Dear Father, Dear Son, Two Lives, 8 Hours. Mm-hmm. Larry is a New York Times bestselling author. But you're missing something here. You're talking about all these lessons, and I really admire you for saying that you're most proud of that, because we've had a lot of people on our show, you know, people like F. Lee Bailey, Alan Dershowitz, Gloria Allred, your buddy, lefty Gloria Allred, Erwin Chemerinsky, another lefty.
Good guy, though.
Jerry Spence, all good people.
Right.
A lot of times they talk about being proud of a case that they won or a cause that they're supporting. You're a family guy, but what you're missing here is you're not talking about the conflict that you grew up with your father.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds us of the famous saying that has been attributed to Mark Twain, but probably wasn't Mark Twain, because apparently his father had died before he apparently wrote this, when he said, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years.
Right.
Tell us about that with your father.
Well, my father was just a grouchy, grumpy, ill-tempered guy who used to take off the belt and spank us when he came home from work. My mother would say, wait till your dad comes home, and my dad would then administer the punishment. And I thought it was too severe, too frequent. I thought my dad overreacted to things that we did. I have two brothers, and we're all very rambunctious and fighting all the time, and I just didn't understand why my dad was so ill-tempered. I knew very little about him, other than I knew that he was an only child, and the only reason I knew that is because during holidays, Christmas, we never got anything from anybody related to my dad. My mother had a whole bunch of relatives. We got a bunch of stuff. So I knew my dad was an only child. That's all I knew about him. He was a janitor. He worked two full-time jobs as a janitor when we were growing up. He cooked for a family on the weekend and went to night school at night. I thought everybody's dad went to night school, by the way.
Right.
So my dad, when he's in his mid to late 40s, starts a cafe near downtown L.A., and all of us work for him. I didn't want to work for him because I didn't like being around him, and I knew that my dad temper would somehow—
Is it true, though, that you didn't speak to him for 10 years?
I'm getting to that. So I'm working for him for now 2 or 3 years, and my dad would scream at me when things would go wrong, and it's a little diner, 15 stools. So when my dad would scream at me, everybody's watching, and it was embarrassing. And I like to say I had enough cashews to say, next time he yells at me, I'm going to sit down with him. We're going to have a mano. We're going to talk about all this. But I was afraid of my father. So I told myself the next time he yelled at me, I was leaving. The waitress had called in sick that day. So it was just my dad and me in the cafe. It was full of people. My dad started screaming at me. I walked out. He came home that night. He was not pleased. He paid me $10 a day plus tips. He balled at the $10, threw it at me as I was laying on my bed. And he said, why did you leave? And I said, I got tired of the way you spoke to me. My dad turned around, walked out of my room, and we did not speak to each other for 10 years.
Wow.
And I mean no conversation. Not, do you think it's going to rain? How about those Rams? What do you think the Dodgers are going to do? We didn't speak to each other at all. I graduated from high school, went to law school, as you know, at Brown. College at Brown on the East Coast, law school in the Midwest, and I worked in Ohio. So my dad and I had zero communication for 10 years. When I came home to visit my mom, they stayed together. They were still married.
Right.
I would just walk by him like he was a tree, and he wouldn't say anything to me. So for 10 years, we said nothing to each other. I'm 25 years old now. And I'm beginning to have difficulty sleeping. And Alan, I felt it had something to do with maybe sort of an unresolved issue with my dad. I guess I wasn't sure. I called my secretary. I said, cancel all my appointments. I'm going to California. And I walked into the cafe, didn't tell my parents I was coming. We closed at 2:30. I walked in at 1:30. I said, Dad, I want to speak with you. He thought it was bizarre. I was walking in. I had two big suitcases. He said, shall I put your suitcases in the back? I said, no, Dad, I'm going to be here for about 10 minutes. I was going to call him an SOB. I figured he'd call me an ungrateful son. At least we clear the air. So my dad came out at 2:30. For the hour I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about what am I going to say to this guy? Be calm, Larry. Be calm. Don't tee off on him.
You have a trouble being calm?
So he sat down and I teed off on him. I told him everything he'd ever done to me, said to me, every spanking, every whipping, every slight, everything he'd ever done to me that teed me off, that made me have such contempt for him. And my dad sat there and took it. I spoke for about 15 minutes nonstop. Every now and then he'd get some coffee and he'd stir it and he'd keep listening. And finally, when I was finished, he said, is that it? And I went, yeah. He said, you didn't speak to me for 10 years because of that? And I said, yeah. He said, let me tell you about my life. And for the first time, I saw my dad cry. I found out as I'm sitting there, we sat and talked for 8 hours. As I'm sitting there, I found out that my last name, Elder, was not the name of his biological father. He never met his biological father. The man, Elder, was some guy who was one of his mother's series of boyfriends who was an alcoholic, physically abusive, didn't really work. And when he did, he would come home, give her the money because he was a drinker. And then on Wednesday, he'd want the money back. She wouldn't give it to him. He beat the crap out of her. My dad would intervene. He beat the crap out of him. He didn't stay around very long. My dad comes home from school, 13 years old, has an argument with his mom's then-boyfriend, who, by the way, the mother was illiterate. My dad doesn't know his birthday. He was born in a little room.
Wow.
She couldn't even write his birthday down in the Bible because she couldn't neither read nor write. So my dad comes home, 13 years old, we assume 13, has an argument with the mother's then-boyfriend. The mother sides with the boyfriend, throws my father out of the house, never to return. You're talking about a 13-year-old boy, Athens, Georgia,
wow.
Jim Crow South at the beginning of the Great Depression.
Unbelievable.
That's my dad's life. None of which I knew. I also found out he'd been married twice before. And I'm sitting there. You were married before? He said, you didn't know that? How am I supposed to know that, Dad?
You know, hearing you talk about this rings so true for so many people. Paul Bremer said, Larry Elder's story of reconciliation with his father is inspiring. If you want to read the book, it's Dear Father, Dear Son, Two Lives, 8 Hours. More with Larry Elder right after this break.
If your tires aren't working as hard as you are, they aren't working hard enough. Right now, purchase a set of four eligible Firestone tires and get a $60 Firestone Visa prepaid card by mail. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Offer valid through July 4th. Card expires. Prepaid card is issued by the Bancorp Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted.
High efficiency meets low prices at the Home Depot's Red, White, and Blue Savings event. With savings of up to 30% on appliance special buys, you can get a Maytag or Samsung washer for just $4.99. And because they're high efficiency, the savings just keep coming. Upgrade your laundry room for less. Shop the Red, White, and Blue Savings event and save up to 30% on appliance special buys. Only at the Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Valid through July 13th, U.S. only. See store for details.
Trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-495-2035. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats, whether they run or not. Call right now and receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call 1-800-495-2035. Donate your car today. That's 1-800-495-2035.
Geico presents Kathy, the Candid Real Estate Agent.
In the master bedroom, you'll see there's room for a king-size bed. And take a look at this walk-in closet. Now just imagine all these custom shelves and drawers turned upside down when a thief goes through them to take your entire vintage sneaker collection.
It's hard to know all that comes with buying a home or condo. That's why the Geico Insurance Agency makes getting covered for personal property loss and damage quick and easy. Call Geico today and see how much you could save on condo and homeowners insurance.
What the hell's going on? Coming up on the next Drive Home with Jillian Barber and John Phillips, we'll tell you what happens when a teacher catfishes his students.
Online.
That's right.
I'm taking every computer out of my house tonight and every device.
I'm sorry. I'll try harder.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, we are back. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Kerry Kasem. And I'm a little bit nervous today because I am with a legend in talk radio.
That means old. I'm old.
No. I'm just a pretender. We have the real thing
here.
Get
off of my lawn!
Larry Elder in the flesh. And Larry, when we talk about talk radio, and really appreciate you opening up and telling us about your background, but let's talk about the impact that talk radio has on the public, politics, law. This is a legal show.
Mm-hmm.
You have the chance to tell people your thoughts, to provide opinions on political issues, on legal issues. As you said to Chris Matthews when you got into the battle with him, you're saying, hey, Chris, are you easy on Obama because you're pushing an agenda? Is that what talk radio is about?
I think so. Talk radio is about having a strong point of view, articulating that point of view, informing people, enlightening people, provoking people. And every now and then, I think convince people to rethink their assumptions. I am under no illusions that just because I have a strong point of view, people will listen to it and go, oh, voila, I think I'm going to cease being a liberal and start being a conservative. But I do think that a lot of people who listen to conservative talk radio, despite the image, are not conservatives. Many of them are centrists or even liberals. They want to hear a different point of view. And I'd like to believe that I can move the needle a little bit in the right direction. By right, I mean the proper direction.
Yeah.
How did these opinions evolve? Here you are, a kid from South Central.
Right.
You know, did go to Brown University and University of Michigan Law School, which a lot of the kids in South Central don't have those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you become this sage?
Hard to say. There was no epiphany. I was always somebody who cared about education. My mom always told me that education was the key to upward mobility. I always wanted to please my mom, so I wanted to make good grades. When I went to college, I certainly was not a conservative. I was a liberal. I believed what my mom believed. My mom was a Kennedy liberal. She thought Democrats were better than Republicans. My dad, by the way, was always a Republican. And I would watch them argue across the table. Because my dad had such little education, my mom had a year of college, so she would just beat the crap out of him during debates. And I just sided with my mom. But when I got older, I got into college, and I took an economics course, the one and only economics course I've ever taken. Changed my life. I realized that Keynesian economics, spending, taxing, spending, and regulating was negative. I realized that when you raise the minimum wage, you actually hurt the chances of people who are unskilled, including unskilled blacks and browns. I found out that free trade was good, and that the idea that you should tax people because they're moving a job from a country to another country only hurts consumers in America. I just rethought all of my assumptions, all my liberal assumptions. I used to think that universal health coverage was a moral right, and I found out that health care is a commodity just like a sweater or a car. And if there's more competition, are you going to improve the quality and improve the accessibility? So I think that probably opened my eyes up more than anything else. But I was always somebody, Alan, who loved to watch William F. Buckley. He had a show called Firing Line for 33 years,
mm-hmm.
And I can't say I always agreed with him, but I remember seeing a black man named Thomas Sowell on his show when I was about 14 or 15 years old, and Thomas Sowell was adamantly opposed to affirmative action. Everybody I knew thought affirmative action was just moral and right and proper because of slavery, Jim Crow. Black people deserve to have a boost because they've been jacked over for all these years. And he argued morally it was not fair, not right, to make the children of white people stand at the back of the bus when the fathers did not own slaves and the grandfathers did not own slaves, and only a small percentage of white people have any sort of generational connection to slavery at all. Most white people who came here or their forebears came here after slavery. And so the idea of 95% of America being responsible for what 5%, the ancestors of 5% did, Thomas Sowell thought was unfair, A. And B, he said that as a being on faculty all these years, I see that when you lower the standards to create some sort of diversity, underrepresented minorities, that is to say blacks and browns, you increase the chances they're going to flunk out. There's a reason that you have standards. There's a reason you have a certain kind of SAT for this particular school. And there are 7,000 universities in this country, from West Cupcake State to Harvard, and there's some sort of school that matches your ability. You ought to go to the school that matches your ability. All of which I had never heard before, and I can't say that I agreed with him, but it certainly made me think.
You know, you talk about this. What comes through is this optimistic perspective of the human condition. But is that realistic? What about
people? Of course it's realistic.
I mean, you had an opportunity. There are people that don't have the opportunity. People who are just losers. They're losers. This world was not created the same. People react to stimuli very differently than you and I, and it causes a snowballing effect where they can't get their lives together. What do we do with those people?
But wait, hold on. Are you saying we cater to the lowest common denominator?
No.
Because that's what it sounds like, especially with some of your views, Alan, the liberal views. I always feel like, why are we catering to the lowest common denominator? Make them rise.
First of all, I don't have liberal views. Secondly, I am asking a question to the witness here.
Yeah, and I've got no problem with that. Look, you play the cards you're dealt. Who's dealt a worse hand than my dad? Doesn't know his biological father. Mother is illiterate. Mother has a series of boyfriends, one of whom beat him up. My dad gets kicked out of the house at the age of 13. Jim Crow South, as I mentioned, right at the beginning of the Great Depression, when 50% of black adults were unemployed. 25% of the country unemployed, 50% of black adults were unemployed. That's a difficult hand. You have a moral obligation to play the cards that you're dealt and try to do the best that you can with them. And if you do that,
for those people or for
yourself? Everybody has a moral obligation to pick up the cards and play them.
What if they're not smart enough? What do we do with those people?
There are always going to be people who can't fend for themselves, who can't fend for themselves because they're not smart, because they have physical handicaps. And a just society deals with those people through charity, through benefits, through helping people. That's what charity is for.
Right.
But the problem with...
And charity doesn't have to start with the government,
right? The problem with government welfare is you create dependency.
Right.
And when you create dependency, you create a sense of helplessness, and then people don't do the kinds of things that they need to escape. Look, that's why we have organizations like United Way, where I volunteered one time for 3 months. And it turns out they're much more efficient than government. You give a dollar to the United Way, to Red Cross, 95% of the intended dollar gets down to the 95 cents of the dollar gets down to the intended beneficiary. Government, 30 cents of the dollar gets to the intended beneficiary because of transfer costs, because people work on salaries as opposed to being volunteers. The question is not whether or not you're going to help people who can't fend for themselves. The question is, how are you going to do it? Every just society will. And we are the most generous society on the face of the earth. We give more money per capita than the Germans do, than the Japanese do. And by the way, conservatives give more money than liberals do. Sure. There's a book called Who Really Cares by Arthur C. Brooks. He wasn't a conservative. He is now. But when he wrote the book, he thought he would just try and explore this because the assumption was liberals are just more generous. It turns out liberals give more time, give more money, give more blood than conservatives give more time, more blood, more money than liberals do. Why? Two reasons. One, conservatives are more religious than liberals are. Religious liberals give as much money as religious conservatives do. There's just a lot fewer of them. The second reason is most conservatives feel that if government doesn't do it, it's my job to do it. And they talk the talk and walk the walk.
Now, what about when we talk about taxation? Because I happen to believe, being from Canada, I like the Canadian system.
My condolences.
Thank you. We had someone on the show who told me to go back to Canada. But I want to tell you something. They have a lot of sales tax in Canada.
They do.
They raise a lot of money. If you buy something, if you're wealthy and you can afford it, you're paying 14% tax. Mm-hmm. Why can't that be the funding versus what they do here on income tax?
Alan, that's why you're here. You're here because there's more opportunity, and the reason there's more opportunity is because our government takes less from people.
They take a lot in income tax, though.
But income tax goes to the Federal Reserve.
And if someone
it doesn't
like
go
Sanders,
to anything else besides the Federal Reserve. A privately owned bank does nothing for our country. Every dollar we pay in income tax goes to the Federal Reserve, which does nothing for our country. We're paying back the loan that they are lending us. It's not that.
And the government has no money, Carrie. They have no money.
That's right.
They other people have money. The government has no money. For every dollar that the government spends, they've taken it from somebody else. And the government government is generally spent it in a less efficient way. Government has a handful of responsibilities, one of which, of course, is the military, to defend people. Besides that, Social Security, welfare, Medicare, all the other stuff the government has its fingers in, they're doing it a lot less efficiently than would be done if they stayed out of it altogether. Plus, they've taken our money.
So how do you reconcile limited government in those areas and then maximum involvement in foreign affairs?
Well, I don't believe in maximum involvement in foreign affairs. You get involved in foreign affairs when it's against, when it's consistent with your own national security interest. I suspect what you mean is things like the Iraq War, where a lot of people feel that we ought not have gone. I don't feel that way. I feel that we went there for our own national security interest. We got bombed on 9/11, and George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the others said, where are we more likely to be attacked again? We knew that Saddam Hussein, we assumed he had stockpiles of WMD because he used them on his own people. He used them on the Iranians. We were technically still at war with him. He hadn't complied with a lot of United Nations resolutions. He was shooting at the British and American planes patrolling the southern and no-fly zones. He was giving $25,000 to families of homicide bombers in Israel. He tried to assassinate the first president, George W. Bush. He was stealing from the Oil for Food program. We felt that we needed to deal with this guy. He had 15 months to thoroughly declare his what he'd done with his WMD. He didn't. Bush went to the House, got a resolution. The Senate got a resolution, got a unanimous resolution for the United Nations, and told Saddam Hussein to fully and thoroughly declare what you've gotten, or we're going to come in there. So he was warned.
But they didn't find anything. The weapons of mass destruction.
Okay, I don't want to go back then. That's history. All I want to say right now is, folks, Larry Elder just recited all that without notes, staring eye to eye right into my eye.
I wasn't finished.
And he wasn't finished. And if you want to hear more from Larry Elder, you're listening to The Larry Elder Show, and I'm Alan Gervey right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We will be right back.
Trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-495-2035. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats, whether they run or not. Call right now and receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call 1-800-495-2035. Donate your car today. That's 1-800-495-2035.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to Roundabout Theater Company's Tony Award-winning Cabaret.
At the Hollywood Pantages Theater, July 19th through August 7th.
Live, and local.
1090,
KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm Alan Gervey. I got to tell you something before we get back to the Iraq War, something, you know, mundane like the Iraq War. I'm in the gym this morning. I'm on the treadmill. I'm talking to my friend next to me, Randy, a writer, and I'm mentioning, oh, I'm going to have Larry Elder on the show. And he says to me, no. And I said, yes, I am. And, you know, Larry's a controversial guy. You never know whether someone's going to love him or hate him. And a lot of people swear by him. They just want to hear everything he has to say. They hold on to every word. This guy says to me, about 6 years ago, he's at Casa Vega in Studio City, and he sees Larry Elder at a table across the way, and for some reason, he just looks at him and puts a thumbs up to Larry at the table over there. That's it, just a thumbs up.
You sure it wasn't a forefinger?
It was a thumbs up. Larry gets up, leaves the pee-pees with, comes, shakes hands, says hello, sits down, says, is it okay if I sit down? They have a half-hour conversation, and Larry ends up hugging and kissing Randy's mother, saying what a sweet woman she is, and then goes back to his folks.
Do you remember that?
I do.
No, you don't. I do. You do it all the time.
I do remember
You're
that.
You're the Gordie Howe.
I do remember that because I don't really like Mexican food, and my girlfriend kind of drags me there. So I don't go there that often. So I remember that.
You're going to disappoint him. He thought you did that for everyone. And I mentioned Gordie Howe because he recently passed away.
He did.
But Gordie Howe was like that. Mm-hmm. He would just go up, and that's what Larry's about. He may have a lot to say, but he loves people.
That's my dad.
I do.
My dad, same thing.
He is not your dad. Same He's thing. Got a different color skin.
That's very true. That's not true. My dad was pretty dark.
Yes,
people
he was.
People don't realize how dark
ask
he was.
Ask your question.
Okay, yeah, I have to ask this. Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered running for office?
I have. I really got close to it. I almost ran against Barbara Boxer the last time.
2010.
Literally, I got... I've been asked to run for mayor. I've been asked to run for governor. I've been recruited to run for president, believe it or not. And finally, I was convinced that maybe I should give this a shot at Senate. So I go on a plane, my own dime, go to Washington, D.C. I have all these meetings with all these Republican senators, John Cornyn from Texas, and a bunch of others. And they tell me your story. So I tell them a little bit about my dad, my mom, my philosophy. And they were all told me that how excited they were to have somebody like me run. So the plane touches down in LAX. I get a phone call, and they said, we're going to go with Carly Fiorina.
Oh,
and I said, why? Wow. They said, three reasons. I said, what? He said, the guy said, she's a woman. I said, I'll give you that. And number two, she's got more money than you. I'll give you that. Number three, she's got higher name recognition than you. I said, no, she doesn't.
No, she doesn't.
Not in California, maybe in D.C. because she used to be the CEO of Hewlett Packard. But out in California, believe me, I had a 35% name recognition because one of my friends tested it. And when Barbara Boxer ran against Bruce Hershenson and Matt Fong, her first two opponents, at the same time during the campaign, they had 5% name recognition. So they were wrong, and Carly Fiorina lost by 12 points or so. I could have lost by 12 points, and I would have spent less money.
You recently moderated the Libertarian debate,
right?
And you did a great job.
By the way, one of the guys, the guy that gave the stirring closing argument, his name was Dr. Feldman. He just died.
Really?
He just died 2 days ago. 58 years old.
58.
58 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the nominee.
Ronald Reagan, what was he, 150 when he died, had great hair, didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you, be a Republican, they live longer.
I'm not sure you should be moderating debates. But let's talk about the Libertarian Party, because here's an opportunity, and they're not taking it. Why aren't you the face of libertarianism?
Well, you just heard me defend the Iraq War. Most libertarians hate the Iraq War, believe that we never should have gotten into it. I think libertarians... on the domestic side, the economy, the Federal Reserve, all the stuff that you were just talking about, libertarians are right on the money. Government shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. The IRS should be abolished. I'm down with all that. I don't like the naivete about foreign affairs. We have enemies. There was a scene in 24 where William Devane played the Secretary of State, had a son who was kind of a hippie, anti-war guy, and he was about ready to go out and protest some military intervention and embarrass his father. Mm-hmm. And his father said, spare me your fifth grade Michael Moore logic. America has enemies. And we have enemies, and they need to be dealt with.
Didn't you do a film about Michael Moore, you and Michael?
I did a documentary called Michael and Me, because he would not come on my show after promising to debate any Republican anywhere, anytime.
And you put up your own money to do it.
Yeah, he didn't show up. So I tracked his butt down. He was giving a book signing in Santa Monica, and at the very beginning of the movie, I ambushed him. And I asked him three times, how often do Americans use guns to defend themselves? He didn't answer. I asked him again, he didn't answer. I asked him again, he didn't answer. Most people who are anti-gun people don't deal with the fact that 1.25 million Americans every single year use a firearm to defend themselves, and 40% believe but for the firearm I would have been dead.
Right.
Now you pair that with the 15,000 non-suicide gun deaths every year, and guns save more lives than they lose.
And those are your statistics. We had Erwin Chemerinsky on the...
He's wrong.
He is very wrong.
Well,
I debate him every single time.
You know, he's so wrong. When you talk about the Second Amendment, you talk about a constitution that when did they make that constitution? Was that a couple years ago?
Yeah, that was like
2012.
And they're making a movie, and maybe Erwin Chemerinsky will see it. By the way, here's the point. When I was in law school, and I'm sure it was your case too, we did not spend 1 minute on the Second Amendment.
Correct.
Nothing. Absolutely right. Nothing.
I never heard of the Second Amendment
wasn't studied,
until recently.
Wasn't studied. They were down on the first, down on the fourth. Nobody studies the Second Amendment.
So did they contemplate back then the semi-automatic weapons? Did they contemplate the world as we have it today? Why don't we have a new constitution, and why don't we look at all of the activities that take place in 2016 and 2017 rather than trying to interpret something that is a fossil?
Because the principles stay the same. The purpose behind the Second Amendment is to prevent tyranny against government. Mm-hmm. Firearm to prevent tyranny against government. Period. End of statement. That doesn't change. And the fear that there'd be a Hitler or a Stalin, by the way, both of whom enact gun control legislation in order to be able to suppress their population, is illegitimate. Jack Kennedy said it is unlikely that we will have a tyrannical government, but that is what the Second Amendment is for. Jack Kennedy sounded like Wayne LaPierre of the NRA back in the day.
So what do we do with people in, let's say, your old neighborhoods mm-hmm. in South Central, who can get a gun whenever they want, however they want, and they're using it when they shouldn't be? You know, you talk about crime, and you say that blacks make up, what, 6% of the population and 50% of the crime?
13% of the population.
13. Okay. And how much, what percentage of the crime?
Depends on the kind of crime, but if you're talking about murders, almost 50% of the murders.
Almost 50%.
Are black on black, yeah.
So if we have tighter regulations, limitations on obtaining guns, if we look at these people who has guns, that's not going to help.
No, it's not. Name the limitation you think that will help. How about not selling guns to black people? You want to do that?
That's a good start.
You want to do that? Just because you're black, you don't sell guns to black people? You probably would reduce some crime.
It has nothing to do with the color of your skin, although you might say it does.
Look, people right now are debating all sorts of things about the Orlando shooting that won't do anything. Mm-hmm. Right now, they want a no-fly, no-buy, no-fly thing. The guy was not on a no-fly list.
Absolutely.
They want to ban the AR-15. He did not use an AR-15. They want to ban automatic weapons. Automatic weapons have been banned since the 30s. He did not use an automatic weapon. He used a semi-automatic weapon. He purchased the guns legally. What you can do, however, is maybe make the odds in favor of the good guys a little bit more. How about designated carry in clubs like that, where there are certain people who don't drink, but whose job is to have a firearm?
Isn't that what a security guard's for?
They had one.
And
you saw what happened.
By the way,
the security guard engaged him. He ran towards him and ran back in and then wasted a whole bunch of people. Obviously, they had insufficient security.
Right.
They should have had more.
And when Donald Trump says if everyone was carrying, and as soon as he walked in there, shoot him right between the eyes.
Well, Donald Trump didn't say that. What he meant was if certain people had concealed carry. And by the way,
he didn't say certain people.
Well,
he did not
well,
say certain
people.
That's what
he meant. He's not precise like you. He's not precise
Absolutely.
Like me.
Absolutely.
That's one of the reasons.
That's one of his problems.
And that's one of the things that people find endearing. He talks like most people do.
Yeah.
But what he meant was if there were people there with concealed carry. Concealed carry is difficult to get. You have to go through a lot of training, a lot of shooting, and people have to be aware of what to do in order to get a concealed carry. They don't hand them out like Skittles. You have to do something to get them. And by the way, very few of them are revoked. The people that get CCWs are the more law-abiding than non-CCW carriers, and they're responsible people. I would be much happier being in a club like that, assuming I went to a club like that, if there were a bunch of people like that who had concealed carry who were strategically sprinkled throughout that club.
Right, on airplanes
there
as well.
There are so many intelligent people that think that we should just take guns away from everybody. It doesn't make any sense when the bad guys are going to have the guns.
That's why
always.
They call them bad guys.
That's right, and they're not going to listen to the laws. Oh, well, you know what? I sell drugs. I pimp out women, but I'm going to listen to the gun laws.
Right.
I'm going to register
laws. How about just putting a sign up saying don't carry your firearm? Yeah, they'll abide by that.
Look, we have to arm the nation. That is what we need to do. You're right. Not everybody's going to carry a gun. Not everybody's going to know how to shoot a gun. But if there were enough people like Arizona, I feel so safe walking into Arizona or Virginia.
Right. Don't feel safe anywhere, Carrie.
No, I carry my gun.
Okay,
that is what
fine.
I do. And I can't get one here. I'm 5'5". I weigh 105 pounds. I can't protect myself. I can't. Even though I know how to shoot a gun, I've been shooting since I was 12 years old.
When was the last time you needed to shoot your gun?
It doesn't matter. It's
it
the
doesn't
fact
matter.
That
okay.
it's... No, Alan, you're making an absolute...
I don't care about
that
guns.
That is a ridiculous assumption.
Thing.
When did you...
Let's talk about something else.
Somebody once said, God made man and women, Smith and Wesson made him equal.
Thank you.
And for a woman who's petite, going to a car in a dark parking garage, it's an equalizer. And people like you need to be able to protect yourself. There's a lot of bad guys out there.
That's right.
There's theory and there's practice, and we'll leave it at that. What about
there's
the Supreme
also statistics.
Court? What and statistics are for losers. Statistics are for losers.
Refuse.
And Larry, before we take a break, tell us about the Supreme Court. This is going to be a huge issue for the future. Why do we even have a Supreme Court? Aren't they just a political tribunal who are going to vote in line with their politics?
Well, their job is to interpret the law. We have a three-part system. We have the legislative branch to pass the laws. We have the executive branch to enforce the laws. And we have the Supreme Court to interpret the laws. And the idea is for them to interpret and not make laws. And I believe that a lot of the ones up there, the four lefties, invent things that aren't there. And that's why we need to have people like Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas. And that's one of the real reasons why, even if you can't stand Donald Trump, if you're a Republican, you should hold your nose and pull the lever for him, because at least he's put forth a list of people from whom he says he's going to choose his nominees. And they're all legitimate conservative people.
It has nothing to do whether it's Donald Trump or another politician. If you want, if you side with certain issues, you need to have the Republican in government as president to nominate the person. Or Donald Trump, if he's the Republican nominee. If you're a liberal, then you want Hillary Clinton. But
correct.
I'll tell you something. Mm-hmm. When you talk about interpreting the Constitution, again, we're talking about an ancient instrument where interpretation can be 100 different ways.
Principles.
There's judicial activism on both sides of the fence. Conservatives and liberal. It depends on what your beliefs are.
Judicial activism is in the eye of the beholder. I'll give you one example. Recently, we had a Supreme Court decision on affirmative action that upheld the use of race as a factor in admissions in the University of Texas. Where do we get off giving somebody bonus points because they're black or they're brown? Where does somebody say that the 14th Amendment that requires equal protection should have been interpreted to still be valid, even though I apply to a school, Carrie applies to the school, we have the same SAT score, the same grades, but I get in and she doesn't.
Stephen A. Smith said this week, I was listening to ESPN, Stephen A. Smith was talking about the lack of blacks in upper management in the NBA, saying it's horrendous. There's such a small percentage, blah, blah, blah. He wants affirmative action in upper management in the NBA. What I say to that, and you tell me if I'm wrong, then why don't we do it on the court?
Absolutely.
Why don't we have
right.
a quota in the CFL and the Canadian Football League? They have quotas for international players and Canadians because
right.
they want to have Canadians. Why don't we do that with blacks and whites? If you want quotas in upper management, put them on the court and let's see three guys who are black and two guys who are white at all times.
You sound like me. I couldn't agree with you more. Stephen A. is an interesting guy. He read one of my books. My book is called What's Race Got to Do With It, my third book, and came on my show when I was here and raved about it. He is somebody who is thoughtful sometimes and then left-wing, unthoughtful other times, and this is an example of that. You buy a club because you busted your butt or your dad did or your dad's dad did, and you were able to purchase a team. Should you somehow have an affirmative action even though you're not a multi-billionaire and you should get a team even though you don't have the money to have one? It's absurd.
It
should there
absurd.
Be affirmative action for people living in Beverly Hills or in Brentwood? Every third house should be a black person or brown person? What kind of sense does that make? You bust your butt and earn it.
Should Merrick Garland have been put through the nomination process?
No.
Why not?
Any more than the Democrats allowed
I'm not asking about that.
Miguel Estrada.
Theory. Let's not talk past. Let's talk theory. Was President Obama the president at the time?
In theory, you should be able to have your guy.
Thank you.
But it changed.
Not my guy.
It changed during the Robert Bork hearing. Do you know that?
That's history.
Do you know that Antonin Scalia, the arguably the most conservative guy up there, do you know how many people voted against him when he was confirmed?
I'm trying to recall.
Zero.
Zero. I thought it was zero.
Zero.
It was not Robert Bork.
Because at the time, it didn't alter the ideological balance
right.
of the court. He was the first Italian-American to be on the Supreme Court, and people
right.
did not want to appear to be bigoted. My point is, this guy is as conservative as you can get. There were no votes against him because at the time, people felt that the elections had consequences, and when you win,
exactly.
you get to, unless
and if you're in office.
Unless they're a horse thief or a wife beater,
absolutely.
They're on the court.
Absolutely.
So in theory,
that's
that ought
the
to
process.
Be the, that ought to be the way
and
it
that's
works.
Where we're going to leave
not,
this
not
issue.
Not the way it works, and so if you're not going to do it on your side, I'm not doing it on my side.
And that's real.
And the liberals started.
Larry
the liberals
Elder
started
is
it.
Real.
Liberals started
forget
it.
Forget about who started it. Forget about
the history. You can't forget about it. Robert Bork was
forget
done.
About the history.
He was borked by Ted Kennedy, who lied about him and maligned him. That's how you guys roll. That's how we're going to roll.
I feel like Piers Morgan here. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790.
And I ended his career, too.
You did. We'll be right back.
World, say hello to some old friends. It's been a long time, but they remember you. They're my toes, and they've been hidden ever since I got nail fungus. Yeah, nail fungus. I know, embarrassing, right? Really ugly stuff that I just couldn't get rid of. Tried several doctors, took pills, creams, even considered surgery. Of course, with that, you lose your nail, and there's no guarantee that the fungus won't come back. So I tried Clear Touch. Clear Touch is a little handheld device you use at home. It's painless because it uses light. Yes, light to travel fast and deep. Can't believe I went so long hiding my toes when this simple, inexpensive solution was waiting right there at Clear Touch. Clear Touch is even cleared by the FDA because it's safe and works. Yeah, my toes saw the light. So, world, I'd appreciate it if you could pass the word about Clear Touch, the phototherapy solution that works.
Call 800-720-1070. That's 800-720-1070. That's 800-720-1070 or cleartouchnails.com.
Hey now, KBC presents the Dr. Drew Mike Catherwood podcast at the Hollywood Improv, Mike.
Oh,
yeah.
Woo! I'm so pumped.
Let's have all the details.
And it's Tuesday, June 28th, 8 p.m. sharp, commercial free.
Woo, I'm there.
Who else is coming to this little soiree?
Rudy will be there. Javier will be there.
One show only.
You know who won't be there, Drew? The FCC.
That's right.
I can say and
oh my God.
And and
oh, snap.
And all that stuff.
Yeah, Mike will be completely unedited, and so will I. One show only selling out fast. If you want tickets, go to KABC.com. Be there Tuesday, June 28th, 8 p.m. from 790 KABC.
The ultimate talking machine. Live and local. KABC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Hey, I'm still here. It's Alan Gervie. I'm not Piers Morgan. I wasn't fired because I went toe-to-toe with Larry Elder. And if you want to see some entertaining video,
and they're they're still cleaning up the blood, I'm telling you.
They're still cleaning up the blood. Yeah. You need to Google Larry Elder with Piers Morgan or Chris Matthews or Bill Ayers.
Or Bill Maher.
Or Bill Maher. Those four, if you hear the exchanges or see the exchanges in Piers Morgan.
Or Doug McIntyre.
I don't know the Doug McIntyre, but I know those other four. Yeah.
That was rock and roll, too.
That just YouTube, Elder, E-L-D-E-R. And you can also go to the Elder State.
Elder Statement, that's my blog.
Elder
Statement. Or LarryElder.com.
LarryElder.com. Mm-hmm. It's really intriguing. There's a lot of stuff you can see on Larry Elder, and you can find out about his views and where to find him. Elder Statement or LarryElder.com. Before we close out, let's talk a little bit about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He's your guy, although you have been apologetic.
He's a process of elimination guy. Out of the 17 people, he was number 17.
Okay.
I am probably as amazed as most people that he was last man standing.
And will he win this election?
He's going to win. He's going to win.
You weren't that confident when I asked you that 2 weeks ago. What happened
in
the last 2 weeks?
I've always said that.
No, you said you're kind of concerned.
Well, I'm concerned, but I think he's going to win. He's got three problems. The first problem is Donald Trump. And self-inflicted
and
wounds.
What was that tweet? A couple. And by the way, your Twitter handle is at Larry.
At Larry Elder.
He's got some great tweets, and he tweeted the three things that Trump has to keep his eye on. What are they?
Himself. The second thing is Republicans, because they're ninnies. Donald Trump made the comment he made about the judge being Mexican. Okay, the judge is from Indiana. He's a Hoosier. He's not Mexican. Apologize and move on. Instead, he got piled on by Paul Ryan, piled on by Mitch McConnell. Meanwhile, Sonia Sotomayor said, I believe, this is before she became a justice, I believe that a wise Latina will almost always give a better decision than a white male. Now, that is far more bigoted than anything Donald Trump ever said. Donald Trump was mad at one guy. Here she is making a sweeping statement about Latinos versus white men. It was racist. And there she is on the Supreme Court. If I were Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan, I would have said Donald Trump shouldn't have said this. However, and then turn the fire. Talk about the things that the other side has been saying that they've gotten passes for.
But as a trial lawyer, let me tell you, we always look at judges, and they do have predispositions. There's no doubt about it. Donald Trump may not have said it properly.
Right, exactly.
But as a trial lawyer, I challenge judges. We do it in a legal forum.
Fair enough.
And, you know, before we go any further, though, we've talked a lot about your dad today, earlier in the show, Randolph.
Randolph.
Mm-hmm. We talked about your relationship with him. You had a wonderful relationship with your mother.
I did.
And your mother would call into your show, and she gave a real life sense of what was going on.
Yeah, my mother was on my show every Friday for an hour. At first, by the way, I hired my dad to be on my show every Friday. And my dad, as I mentioned, had a cafe. And my dad has this theory. He could look at you when you walk into the cafe and tell what percentage tip you're going to leave. White people versus black people versus Latinos versus older versus younger. It was amazing. He was almost always right. So I asked my dad to do this. He was reluctant. He comes on the air. I said, Dad, tell me about tipping. White people versus black people. My dad goes, well, you know, it's hard to say. And I said, what about men versus women? Well, it's hard to say.
Oh, he didn't have an opinion.
We took a break. I said, Dad, what are you doing to me? He said, I don't want to offend people. I said, talk radio is the offending business. You're fired. Put mom on.
And that's how a star was born.
Right.
And in tribute and honor of Viola Elder, Mom, are you there?
I am. Actually, I'm so emotional I could cry when I listen.
Why?
Well.
You agree with what Larry's
Larry's
saying?
Mom and
his dad.
Wow.
And his dad, and he was so close to his mom, as is Alan Gervey to his mom.
Wow.
And so good to.
And you know, he called his mom the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Right.
Mom, can I call you the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Canada?
I'm the Chief Justice of the. Of the cheesecake court.
The cheesecake.
Baking and cooking
so cheesecake.
You know, Mom, when my mom died, my brother and I were trying to figure out what to put on the headstone. And the show she had done right before she died on a Tuesday. She was on Friday. A trucker called up, long distance, and she said, you know, Larry, I've been listening to you and your mom now for about 3 or 4 years. Your mom is not your mom. Your mom is America's mom.
Wow.
And so on the headstone, it says Viola Elder, the date she was born, date she died, America's mom.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, that's lovely. Mm-hmm. You had such a good relationship. It's wonderful that sons are so great to their moms.
So can we have a good relationship, Mom, and can we not agree on things? Like, do you agree with what Larry's been saying on the show today?
I'm dizzy from listening to all that.
I'm dizzy, too.
Yeah.
You guys have a wonderful relationship. I have to say, Alan, you and your mom, it's such a beautiful relationship.
She's got such a beautiful voice.
But they just love each other so much, and he does so much for her. And she's just, you're living the life right now. We just got to get you a boyfriend.
Mrs. Gerby, where
are you? Thanks, Carrie. Are you working on it?
I am. I'm trying.
Mrs. Gerby,
I'm beginning to give up.
Where are you from originally?
Anyways, I enjoy coming
Mom, before you go, where are you from originally?
I'm from Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. I was born there.
And now you live in Toronto?
I live in the big city of Toronto.
Toronto's like New York City. That's a huge city.
I miss Winnipeg.
She misses the small town values.
Pardon?
You miss the small town values of Winnipeg.
Yeah. And my friends and my family's here. You go where your family is. Because family is very important.
And that's why Larry came back to L.A. after being in Cleveland for like 17 years.
That's right. I was away from home for 25 years. I left when I was 17. And I came back to California when I was 42, and I really missed home. I couldn't wait to get away from California when I was 17. I couldn't wait to get back to it when I was older.
Mom, how did you feel when you saw me graduating from Brown? Because I want to know if Larry's parents felt the same way as when my dad was alive at that time.
Yeah.
And what kind of feeling coming from Winnipeg and going to Brown and graduating?
You're going to make me cry.
Well, you cry all the time anyway. Larry, do you remember your parents?
We were so proud, and you worked your way through, and you didn't ask for lots of money, and you just did your thing.
I used to schlep all those
boxes.
Remember, I worked in the stock room.
And one fell on you.
And it's a great school.
It fell on my
head. It's a great school. It's difficult to get into. It's a wonderful place to go to school, Providence, Rhode Island, and you certainly should be proud.
As your parents were,
I'm very proud of
him.
Sure. And he's such a good son, I can't ask for anything better.
You know, at the beginning of the show, I was talking about all Larry's accomplishments and achievements, and I said, what are you most proud of? And, of course, he said, my relationship with my family. That tells you something about a person, doesn't it, Mom?
Yes, he's like us.
Aww. He's like us.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter the color of your skin, the religion,
no,
or anything else.
We
if
have,
you have
the same values.
Well, Mom, I no longer have a mother. You want to adopt me?
I would love to.
You got it.
I hope you like cheesecake.
It's done.
I hope you like cheesecake.
I love cheesecake.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
I have to make a cheesecake and bring it next time I'm
She's
in
gonna
L.A.
She's going to bring you a cheesecake.
I love cheesecake.
Well,
I just tweeted a picture of me in New York eating a big piece of cheesecake.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we got to go. Mom, you have a good weekend. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you so much, and I enjoyed the program, and good luck to everybody.
Larry.
God bless, Mom.
Bye.
Thank you so
bye.
Much. Larry Elder, the sage of South Central, thank you for being here. It's been a great time.
Great time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. And we'll be right back here on Talk Radio 790 KBC next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.